It's the National Hour on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live and in color. Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365, also coast to coast on Sportsnet. Baseball tonight, Sammy?
Oh, yeah. Big time baseball. Perfect flick back option for the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. New York Mets home for the LA Dodgers. Game 3 of the NLCS at Citi Field in New York. Going to be a madhouse. Can't wait. Walker Buehler versus, I think, I don't know who the pitcher is for this.
Walker Duehr. He plays for the Flames.
No, Walker Buehler.
Oh.
In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Ferraro will join us. ESPN hockey analyst, former National Hockey Leaguer. He did the Oiler game last night.
What an Oiler game.
Where Sammy said that, they lose and they're done.
Or stick by it. It was a must-win game.
Cooked. Buddy, they were damn close to losing. But they got really unlucky with some of the calls, with some of the way that game shook out, and then just got a, I was on with Ken Reed last night. He thought the fights really turned the emotion up, and all of a sudden the Oilers found him.
I totally agree with him. I think it helped on the sense of urgency to get emotionally invested.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't argue that it did give the sense of urgency to the fans that they
something matters.
They can't let this game slip.
No.
They can't let the points be lost here.
Drysdale buried a guy at the end of the second. Couturier runs into Skinner, and all of a sudden, you get a fight there. Stetcher, your smallest D, standing up to the other team's captain. Perry comes out. It just really felt like the Oilers found a reason to get into a game, and they seemed to struggle to be getting into the season. And I wonder if last night was the impetus for a little bit of a run here.
And boy, that Michkov looks good.
Yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, like the first goal's great.
Surprised Montreal didn't after watching him in the NHL.
And then the second one was Draisaitl-esque. That shot from the sort of half-board area, top corner.
But I'll be honest, I'm more impressed by the fact that he put Nurse in a headlock and he dug through the pad to get a goal. Like, he's elements of wanting to play in the league.
Thank God the Habs
didn't
take him. Oh, thank God.
And if you're John Tortorella, too, you watched two pretty good hockey players get involved in the fisticuffs. Stetcher does a nice job of getting Katori off. Like, you've got a lead.
Mm-hmm.
He is considered, he's won a Selke.
Yeah.
Has he not? Like,
if not,
that's the guy,
say yes.
That's the guy the coach needs to help shut the door down.
Yeah.
The fact that Stetcher got him off the ice was gold.
Yeah. Yeah, and,
Couturier won the Selke in 2020.
Yeah, there you go.
And the way that game went down, I know you weren't up to the very end, but the Connor McDavid defensive play at the end where...
Oh, I stayed up.
You did, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you think it was a penalty?
I thought it was a penalty on a lot of other guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Except Connor.
For sure. He didn't take a penalty. I don't think he reached in. I don't think he tripped him.
But what was established is lost body position.
He's on the wrong side of a guy,
right?
And gets a hand in.
And he gets his hand in.
That's usually enough for them to say you took away a scoring chance. And then they go the other way, and the Flyers absolutely stop playing hockey. I'll do a quick Google to figure out who number 38 was, because that was the last I saw of it. But on the back check, Connor doesn't score, goes in the corner, and 38 on the Flyers turns up the ice like we're going to go the other way. Like, Connor McDavid has the puck in overtime in your zone, man.
I think it was Konechny. I think that
was
that ended up behind the net covering nobody, if I'm not mistaken. All right,
here.
Let's welcome him in. Fresh off being inducted into the BC Hall of Fame, the great Ray Ferraro.
Right.
Wow, that's huge.
Raymond, do we have
He's
you?
Speechless.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's you know what's cool about it? Well, a couple things, right? Like, it's nice to be remembered, like, that's always kind of nice. But it also, you just sit there and, like, I started thinking about my mom and dad and about Little League Baseball. And eventually I get to the hockey, but it's all the cool stuff that I've been lucky enough to do and the people that help you do it. And, like, my mom and dad have been gone a long time, and so it was really a great morning to sit there, and Cammie and I could talk about it. And, she never met my dad, and you know, just met my mom once, you know, for like 6 or 8 months before she passed. And then like somebody had a video, like, this is crazy. I've never seen it. Like when I was playing Little League in 1977, mm-hmm. and I hit a grand slam home run in the Canadian Championships, and I did an interview, and I was like, it's like all these things that happened today were just really, really cool. It was awesome.
Yeah, congrats, Ray. That's really cool. You know, I was fortunate enough to get to play some hockey in Trail Roslyn growing up a little bit. That area obviously had a big impact on, you know, shaping your career and getting you where you ended up, eh?
It really did. You know what? They said something in the Christine Sinclair's announcement, and you know, one of, you know, maybe Canada's greatest female soccer player, and that, you know, she's become a part owner of the new women's pro franchise here, and they were talking about how she's given young women and young girls something to look up to, someone to look up to, someone that's achievable. And when I grew up in Trail, like, my heroes weren't really the Boston Bruins. I mean, I cheered for the Bruins. Bobby Orr was my guy. But, like, it was the people that I saw around our town. Like, the guys that were, like, my dad's friends, they all played on the 1961 World Championship team. And so guys that were stars in Europe, I knew them. I knew them right. As, like, they were, like, my goal was to play in Trail at 8:30 on Friday nights for the Trail Smokers. And Steve Tambellini, who was probably 5 or 6 years older than me, he was the guy I was behind. So when I watched Steve go to the Western League and then Steve get drafted by the Islanders in the first round, and like, I wanted to be Steve, right? Like, if you got somebody to emulate, it kind of sort of seems possible, I guess.
Super cool.
We are joined by British Columbia Sports Hall of Famer inductee Ray Ferraro. How far could like the Elmer Ferguson Award be from you as well? Like, you're going to load up broadcasting awards.
You got,
hey,
you're such a dog.
Hey, how has the start of the season been for you? Obviously, ESPN very much involved. We saw you go from one city to another on the triple header, ending up. We went from Seattle to Utah, correct?
Right. That was a lot of fun. I mean, I've done 2 games in a day before, many times with the World Junior, and then at the World Hockey Championships. Couple of times we did 3 games in a day, which, I mean, by the end of the 3rd game, like, you've got the wrong players playing on the wrong teams and the wrong, you can't even remember anymore. You're like, oh, I don't know, the tall guy over there, right? Like, so it wasn't as big a challenge, I guess, because it, you know, it's 4 different teams. You got to prep more and longer, but it's easy to keep them separated. I had that 2-hour gap in between, but I'm telling you, I think one other time I've been on a private jet, and when it's you, the 2 pilots, and a video guy, that's the way to fly.
You're spoiled rotten.
Oh, Kip did. He had like some food, and then they're like, oh yeah, check out that drawer there if you want any snacks. I opened up, I'm like a cookies guy, and oh my God, they had like all these different cookies in there. I'm like, this is the best part of it. Oh yeah, I got to do another game. I was almost in a food coma by the time I got there. But it was cool to go to Utah. Like, the building itself right now is exactly like the old Arizona Phoenix building. Like, it's exactly the same. It's a basketball building, really sharp, steep seating. It's incredible to me that they're going to take the ends off that arena and flatten out the bowl so it'll be, you know, a complete hockey arena, like a multi-purpose rink. It's just remarkable, but it was enthusiastic. I think the team's going to be pretty good. Finally, they've got some money so they can go and get some players and improve their roster. And so that was pretty fun to see. Since then I've seen Philly a couple of times. I did the game last night for ESPN, and so see the Oilers win. I saw the Canucks lose a couple times, and man, October hockey is tough to make sense of sometimes.
It is, for sure. And by the way, it's a good point about them having some money, because it's almost like the league added another team. Like, instead of adding a warehouse for bad contracts, like, it's another team trying to be competitive. So that's pretty fun.
Could you imagine for Bill Armstrong, finally, like, he gets to open up his desk drawer and there's money in it, as opposed to like paper clips or whatever they had.
Mothballs.
Right? Like this is, they can go and sign Dylan Gunther and they can make a trade for Sergachev, and some things will work out and some things won't, but they won't be spending $51 million anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's not going to be.
So Ray, you watched the Oilers last night. I was on that game too. What are your thoughts on where the Oilers are at? There's a little bit of panic there early, but still a couple of decent hockey players there.
Yeah, I just watching them and watching the day there. You know, we were there in the morning and then go back, and it feels stressful, and I don't really know why they feel stressed. Like you can just feel it. And man, it's three games and they didn't play very well. And, you know, I mean, the team is not what it was 6 months ago, right? They're older, they're slower, and there's zero chance that defense is going to be the same in March as it is now. So I was really quite surprised with the stress and the frustration you could see. Like, you know, like they benched Draisaitl for a couple of shifts last night. The cross-checking penalty he took at the end of the second period, I was like, what's he doing? Mm-hmm. Like, that wasn't even it wasn't even sneaky, like you were trying to get away with it. He just, like, skated across the ice and cross-checked the guy standing in the slot. And so I think that was the biggest takeaway I had, was that they're frustrated here for no particular reason. There's so much time left. And if you remember last year, their power play sucked at the start of the year. And then by the end of the year, it was one of the best in the league. So their power play right now doesn't look very good. It's the same five guys as last year. I'm pretty sure they'll find their way.
You know, the one thing as a player I try to do, again, you know where your limitations are, you know your role, but and there are times, Ray, and you've been around a very long time to understand that even if sometimes things aren't going well for your hockey club, internally you have to find a way to still have some fun coming to the rink, whatever that means. And all I've seen out of the Oilers to start the season is I'm not sure who's having fun. I'm not sure if they have a guy that can kind of just ease the tension a little bit in that room, but they've struck me as a team that I look at, and to your point where that stress factor is, who's alleviating any of that stress?
You can be a class clown, but you need the head guys to alleviate the stress. Mm-hmm. And Kip, you know, like I was in New York only a very short time, but the first couple of games of the year, we lost and didn't play very well. We lost at home, I forget to who, and it was a messy, ugly game. And so we came in after the game, and the next day we played on Long Island. And I felt like as we walked in, like Mess was going to blow up, like that he was going to give it to the team. Like, hey, you know, pull your heads out. We got to get going. He didn't say a word, nothing. And we got on a bus and we bussed to Long Island. We got to the hotel and I happened to be in the elevator, and we go up. He doesn't say a word. And as he was getting out, he's like, come to work tomorrow, boys. And he just walked to his hotel room. And the fact that he did that, there was no stress. Like, to me, I read that as like, okay, he knows we're a good team. Mm-hmm. But he clearly knows we played lousy. And then the next night, we played great. And we won. And we were kind of off and running a little bit. But I always remember that had he come in, and because it wasn't like anyone else was going to do it, but had he come in and really laid the riot act down, there would have been a stress level increase. The tension would have been there. And look, Connor's wired tight and he works hard, and not everybody can keep to that. And I don't know if it must be really hard to just kind of let that go a little bit, but if he can, if Draisaitl can, man, that changes the whole outlook of that team.
Just not
whether they get better or not, but they just, everybody takes a half a breath.
Yeah, just to add to that, like, again, being in the room and thinking when's a good time to kind of loosen up the guys, either I did something or I said something, and then I'd look at Noodles, the first Noodles, Brian Noonan, and I'm like, did Mess laugh? I wouldn't even look. I'm like, is he laughing? Is there a smile on his face? And to your point, if there is, then everything's fine. And if it's not, then, you know, we're gonna tighten up here real quick.
Well, you know what I thought was really, well, impressive, I guess is the right word, is that, so Draisaitl didn't have a very good game. He took the bad penalty. And then in the third period, Chris Knobloch left him off two rotations. He benched him. I look down, he's sitting down by the D. I've been in that seat. You never choose that seat. If you're down by the D, you're there because you know you're not going out anytime soon. And then the Oilers got a power play, and Draisaitl got back in the game. I was curious if he was going to leave him for one more rotation or if he was going to jump him back in anyway. But in any case, he made a great play, beautiful pass on the Bouchard goal to McDavid over to Bouchard, and then he scores the game winner. And I'm like, that took a lot of courage for Knobloch to do. Like, it's not easy to say to one of your best players, yeah, not tonight, go sit over there. Mm-hmm. But he did it, and I think the Oilers will reap the benefit of it.
So, Ray, I wrote a little article today about, like, some of the teams that we thought were going to be good who are struggling. Nashville, Edmonton was kind of lumped in there, too.
Colorado.
There's more. But also, you know, there's some teams that we thought that weren't going to be great. Calgary Flames are off to an unbelievable start. So how much does early season momentum affect a team? Or does it just sort of normalize your true talent level comes out over 82 games? Or can you ride one of these waves of momentum?
And add Vancouver Canucks to that as well.
For sure.
Sure, I think a team that has no expectation getting out of the gate really great might propel them into a pretty decent stretch of hockey. But over 82 games, mm-hmm. we know this. Like, you get hurt, your goalies hit the rut a little bit. Your lack of a depth of talent really comes back and bites you eventually. Mm-hmm. And so those teams, I think, tend to fall back to where they might outkick where predictions were at the start of the year, but they start to fade away. The good teams, eventually, I mean, the Oilers are a terrible example last year because they won 18 in a row. Like, that's not happening again. But good teams find their way. The turnover on the teams, I think, has been really notable. For a couple of the teams you mentioned, like the Oilers got a bunch of new guys. Vancouver's got seven. Aside from not playing well, they got seven new guys. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I look at Vancouver, there's no Demko. There's no Dakota Joshua. Demko's a game changer, right? He clearly, he's one of the best half dozen in the league. Joshua was a impact, powerful player for them last year. I think they miss him a lot. Pettersson has not had a very good start. DeBrusque has had a quiet start. And so you add all that up and you got a team that's got 2 points in three games. So I think that stuff is kind of works its way out. The one right now I look at and I wonder a bit is Colorado, because their goalies are playing dodgeball. They pick up another guy, right? Cocking in on waivers. Like, you don't pick up another goalie if you're happy with the two you got. And, you know, to hope that Landeskog can make a difference after 2 years away is probably a little unrealistic. I mean, I don't know what the prognosis is for him, but if he comes back, you'd have to think it would take a long time to just even find out what he's going to be. Nichushkin is another story. Like, how do you even know? What do you know? I mean, these are important pieces out of their lineup. And, so Colorado, I still think they've got too many good players, but I wonder a little bit about them. If they're dodgy in goal, it's tough to stuff to wallpaper a lot of the other mistakes.
We're talking to Ray Ferraro, ESPN hockey analyst. Ray, outside of some teams off to slow starts, I think a storyline that we've seen developed early in this season is goaltender interference. I think at one point during the hockey game, the Oilers had more disallowed goals than they've scored
all season. Yeah,
right, all season.
They were 4-3. Yeah,
it's quite remarkable. But you know, a lot of people in Edmonton baffled, including their head coach, on what goaltender interference and isn't. What are you seeing?
You know, Kip, I've never had a really great feel for. I mean, unless it's totally obvious, right? Like, there's some you look at and you go, eh. Like when I watched the Bouchard goal that got disallowed last night, as soon as you see the replay and I think it was Hyman hits his blocker and his blocker turns inward, you're like, well, that's not going to count. But the Corey Perry one the other day, I didn't see why it was interference. You can say he had a significant significant presence in the crease. I've never heard that before. Like, I've never heard that phrasing. And I'm like, so now, would you ask if you're in the crease, is this insignificant or is this significant? Like, how, it's like everything is splitting hairs. And I don't know how there'll ever be a consistency to it when each goal call takes multiple replays and then you're still not sure. Now, I was an advocate before, and everybody that I talked to seemed to think it was just goofy. But in the international game, if you were positioned with anything in the crease, the goal didn't count. It doesn't mean skating through the crease. It means if you're screening the goalie and your heels are in the crease, doesn't count. Because what ends up happening is the blue paint is for the goalie, and the white paint is for the players. And I think it's...
Aren't we close to that based on the calls that we've seen? We're really close to that.
Well, if we're really close to it, then we should get to it. Because, Kip, what I like about it is that it separates the decision. You look down, the guy's feet are at all in the blue, then the goal doesn't count. Because right now, they could be in the blue if it wasn't a significant presence, and it could still count. So if that's the case, which it is, why is the crease blue? Like, what's the point? Like, just so it's a nice color on the ice? It's like, if it matters, then make it matter. And I want clarity, right? I just want clarity to the rule as best as they can. It's never going to be perfect, and it's an impossible thing to try and thread the needle on. But when any of it is interpretation, I think you're kind of barking up the wrong tree, right? Like, you're going to look at a play, I'm going to look at a play, Justin's going to look at a play, and it's going to be 2-1 80% of the time.
Just one more thing on this. And I go back because the first thought was goal disallowed because it's Corey Perry. And Corey Perry has a reputation with the league about flying too close to the sun.
Right.
So where are you on judgments on reputations? No different than, does a guy get the benefit of the doubt who's tripped if he's constantly embellishing?
Okay, so that's a good example. But what I would say to that is, that's why in my world that, you know, that nobody is asking about, but is that the blue paint should matter. It should matter.
Well, let me stop you there, Ray. You're saying that it does matter currently, right? You know, like that the contact comes last night in the blue paint, so it's relevant.
Okay, but it, Perry, in the game that Perry's goal got, it's two games ago, Calgary, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's standing there. The goalie's not touching him. He's not touching the goalie by this point. He's already poked him in the ankle. The goalie fell down, got back up, and now he's got a chance to get set. He's standing where he's standing. The goal's not disallowed because his feet are in the blue. The ruling was that it's a significant presence in the crease.
In the crease.
So does that mean? Yes, but that does that mean if he's, what if he's 2 inches forward and his heels are in the crease? In my mind, that does not count. And then what happens is before you get to the problem, the players know, they just look down and it's blue, and then they move forward. But right now, guys, like, it happens fast. It's not like, you know, they got all kinds of time and I think I'll go two more feet in the crease. They're in there, they're joshing all of a sudden, and you're like, oops, I'm in a crease.
Well, or you can just fall on the goalie all the time by mistake, like some guys do, and that seems to work out okay. Not referencing anyone in particular, but
there was a time. There was a time.
Yeah. No, I've seen it definitely used as a game plan from time to time. Do we need to? What's going on?
Oh, I'm good.
Or we're good? Okay. Yeah. Well, before we let you go, Ray, just want a last question for me. I know it's illegal for us to talk about the Leafs in the National Hour, but wanted to get your thoughts on their changes and if they look any different to you with a couple of new guys in the back end, Tanev and OEL.
Well, I live in Vancouver. I've watched Chris Tanev play a long, long, long time. And the thing about Chris Tanev is he does everything about as simply and as quietly as you can. Mm-hmm. And it almost always is the right thing. He had that stretch of his career where he got hurt a lot, but over the last, 4 or 5 years, that's not been the case for whatever the reason is. The guy eats pucks like crazy, but when the puck's on his stick, more often than not, it's in a safe play when it leaves his stick. I know why lots of teams were trying to sign Chris Tanev. He's a really good player. OEL, when he got bought out in Vancouver, the problem that he had was his contract wasn't commensurate with, he's not a $7 million player.
Right.
And so he goes to Florida and they get him for $1 million. Man, the guy's healthy. He can skate. He can move the puck. He's smart. Like he's just a good NHL defenseman. And so if you put enough of those people in the right place, and he can move left side to right side. He gives you a little versatility when guys get banged up. They're really good signings. Really good signings. What I like, we've watched Chief coach for a long time. That there's nothing fancy about the way he views the game. He'll let skilled and fancy players do their thing, but it's straight ahead. It's very simple, and it's not safe, but it's sure. That's what he's looking for. So I love that I see after a goal, he's got a line he trusts. And last game, it turned out to be that fourth line. Yeah. And he's got him on the ice after a goal for and a goal against. Because he wants momentum. He wants the forecheck. He wants the body. Because over time, he's trying to impact the game with the way they play. I've liked their start. And as far as October hockey, to tell you how goofy it is, if anybody's worried about Austin Matthews, they should probably stop.
Yeah.
And right, like it's October and he's going to get whatever he's going to get. And pretty soon you're going to go, oh, would you look at that? He's got 7 goals in 5 games. Yeah. Right. Like, so the worry spots for Toronto are not what they were. We'll see about the goaltending. I see Wohl is back and taking shots and, but the goaltending's not been a problem at all so far. So, maybe things are going to look a little different come March and April when it really does matter.
Ray, I saw Dick Todd last week at Mike Keenan's book launch, Iron Mike, available.
Was he Carlton?
Yeah. Before we go, can I tell the boys my favorite dressing room story?
Oh, I don't know what your favorite is, but I know you would have.
My all-time favorite is we had segments for 5 games with money, and Dick Todd's main job in 95 was to update us where we were when it came to money, and Dick did the segment, and he said that this is what we need for $200, this is what we need for $400, this is what needs. Now let's go out there with peckers in the air. And then it was kind of quiet. And then Ray whispers in my ear, you know, you work your whole life to get to the best league in the world, and that's the help you get.
So let's go get them, boys.
Hey, feel free to use that in your acceptance speech in the BC Hall of Fame, my friend.
You know,
I'll dial it up, kid. Thanks a lot, man.
Great stuff, buddy. Thanks for joining us. We're going to do it again soon, okay?
Yeah, take care. Great to talk to you guys. Be well.
Thanks, Ray. You too.
Ray Ferraro, ESPN hockey analyst and newest member of the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Good stuff, man.
That was awesome. Love that.
He's great.
He's just, his voice is hockey to me. Just heard him talk hockey for my entire, you know, life. But he said the best thing ever. Then why is it blue? Well, why is it a different color?
Yeah. I don't want to do it again.
Well, yeah, because we need to get into it again. But it's a good point. Why is it blue?
It's
why
blue
is it different?
It's his area.
But it's not illegal to be there.
But it's illegal to touch the goalie there.
Yeah. Yeah. No contact.
Yeah.
This is as simple as it gets. You make contact with him in there, you run the risk of the goal being disallowed.
We do not agree.
End of story.
Okay.
That was simple.
Okay. Game time after the break.
You got her.
All right, more on Real Kipper and Bourne as we dive into the news and notes, including a goaltender who scored into a net for the 11th time in NHL history. Does that mean that 10 others have done it? Mm-hmm. Let's see how many we can name after the break.
Give us time.
Don't cheat either. I see you guys on the internet. I'm smacking you in the head. More Real Kipper and Bourne.
Sammy's Googling for Samulets.
After the break.
All right,
bye. Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Plenty still on the table here for the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. News and notes coming up. But first, let's take it to Sammy for a little game time.
It's game time.
It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. A couple things for tonight. First thing, Leafs hosting the LA Kings. The dam is going to break for Austin Matthews here eventually. Thought he was unbelievable on Saturday against the Penguins. Had many chances. Hit the post a couple times again. Got stoned on a breakaway. I like Austin Matthews 2 points tonight at plus 150. Feel like that's going to hit here soon. Feels like he's going to, the well is going to break, the dam's going to break, and he's going to get a couple tonight. So give me Austin Matthews 2 points at plus 150.
Yep, like it.
The Sabres are in Pittsburgh to take on the Penguins. Sabres are slight underdogs, plus 100. Penguins minus 120. I think the Sabres are going to be inspired after Darlene beat the crap out of one of his teammates and felt bad about it, but everybody thought it was a cool thing, a.k.a. Borny. Give me the Sabres plus 100 against the Penguins
tonight.
Friends,
everyone.
Who I think, like, we're, the Penguins and Sabres are way closer than anyone's willing to admit.
Yeah, no, I think they're both going to be like, are we wild card rivals? Like, this is actually a big game.
So give me the Sabres at plus 100. And the LA Dodgers making a visit to Citi Field tonight to take on the New York Mets in Game 3 of the NLCS. We have it on Sportsnet tonight at 8 o'clock. Give me the New York Metropolitans, baby, minus 105. Luis Severino on the hill going up against Walker Buehler in his tight pants. Love the Mets to beat the Dodgers at Citi Field tonight. So those are my things for tonight. And that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
And this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365. Just to kind of follow up on Austin Matthews a little bit, because you know how stupid and crazy Twitter can get. Austin was trending last night, and not that I follow closely, but you're like, why, right? When you
Amulet?
See someone's name, why? No.
Oh, okay.
It's because Gustafson has more goals than Austin going into tonight.
He also has more power play goals than the Leafs this year, Gustafson.
Gustafson has more goals than Connor McDavid and Matthews combined.
Yes.
He's on fire.
Yes.
He is. Tearing it up.
So, as you had stated before the break, Gustafsson is the 11th goalie to score a goal in NHL history, shooting the puck in the net. How many do you remember here?
It's really funny that, like, I'm typically very bad at this sort of thing. Ron Hextall
scored twice.
Yeah. Linus Allmark.
It's hard to forget the first.
Right. Allmark.
That was like, wasn't that last year?
Yeah, recently. Did Billy Smith, I know he was credited with one. I think he shot one in.
No, he...
Only credited with one?
I think he's only got one, and it was off of a rebound, and then someone shooting the puck back to the point that ended up going into the net. There's the only goal that I remember from Billy Smith.
Jose Theodore?
I don't know. I don't remember Theodore.
I remember Theodore for some reason.
And also remember...
Mike Smith, too, I think.
Did Marc-Andre Fleury ever get one?
This is great radio. I don't think so.
This
is great radio.
Chris Osgood.
Yes.
Was credited with one.
Yes.
That I don't remember.
Do you want the list? I can pull it up here.
Okay, pull it up now. Okay. Who are we missing?
All right. Here we go here. Okay. This is according to Wikipedia. So the ones that were shot on goal. So these are, Billy Smith has them, but it was an own goal. So shots on goal were Hextall twice, Osgood, Martin Brodeur. I mean, that one's literally on the lineup. So,
yeah.
I mean, that one's on there.
We don't read your lineup, by the way.
Thanks, buddy. I only spent all this time making it look great for you, Kippy. Jose Theodore.
Oh, he is on it.
Yep. Evgeny Nabokov.
I don't remember him.
Power play goal. Mike Smith.
Should have had that.
Pekka.
Yeah, should have had that, too.
Linus Ullmark. Tristan Jarry.
Nope.
Last year.
Never would have got it.
And Philip Gustafsson. So there's the list.
It feels like it's increasing in frequency as goalies can shoot it better.
It looks awesome, exciting
for the goalie still. I mean, and the teammates.
Yeah.
But it's not that big of a deal anymore, is it?
I will say, like, it's not an irrelevant factor. I don't know what the score was in that game. Was it 2-1, 3-1? Putting the game away matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you shoot it. If you're trying to set up the goalie, you know you do. You take a slap shot and get it to him as quick as possible in the chest and let him set it down.
That's exactly what happened.
That was on an absolute tee. Marc-Andre Fleury is getting credit for telling him to shoot for it.
The only thing I remember is going to
they were up two.
Going into Philadelphia's training camp, pretty much the same time Ron Hextall was transitioning into being the number one goalie for the Philadelphia Flyers, and then watching him stick handle and shoot the puck with a glove,
shovel,
a blocker, and a large piece of lumber.
It was
unheard of at this point.
Yeah.
And we're talking about 1984. Mm. Like it was like watching like a man go to the moon for the first time. Like it's just like, this is not goalies. What are you doing? And he just changed the game forever.
He really revolutionized the position, and not everything stuck, like the being violent. But, he was a different cat who played his own way.
But just the ability to be a third stick handler back there to break out a zone. Forget about shooting the puck in the net 200 feet.
Yeah, then guys like Turco and Brodeur came around.
Just making a first pass and being like a third defender.
Mm-hmm.
And how many defensemen did he save from going face into the glass?
Oh, yeah.
How many careers did he extend?
Yeah. It's really nice. I had a college teammate. He had a cup of coffee, the Islanders, Nathan Lawson. And he used to, as soon as he would catch it, I would take off. Because the other team just kind of sleeps and assumes you won't, but he could fire at the length of the ice, and I ended up with a few breakaways in college. When you play with those guys, it is like cheating, and hence the trapezoid came in. And
can I ask why the trapezoid?
Well, yeah, you can, and it's actually a fair question if it's still necessary. It was that they felt like it was killing offense because goalies were stopping pucks, breaking the puck out. But then you just adapt and you stop chipping it in behind the net. Don't let the goalie play it. So I thought
when goalies started getting out there was always the most exciting thing.
Yeah, like
when
they start, play.
When they're like, he's going to wander and go out into the corner area.
Yeah.
There's some memories of goalies going out there and just bad stuff happening.
There's never been a rule in the history of the game that I know of that has actually helped goalies other than maybe,
well, you know, goalie interference. If you breathe on one, then you don't have to
outside of that.
That's pretty good.
But like everything's been skewed to more offense.
Yeah.
Every rule is based on for the shooter and not the goalie.
Because they have there's no bigger change in the sport than what goalies used to look like to what goalies are now. And the shooters have caught up a little bit, but that, what was the era? Was it the late 90s, early 2000s, where you just could not. The goalies got so much better and the shooters were still shooting it on the ice. Like your generation that all hates people who shoot everything high now. I shoot everything high.
I guess I don't really remember the discourse when that rule was brought in. You know, I wasn't really locked into the discourse when the trapezoid was brought in. But to me, having a goalie go out there and make a decision is exciting.
Very fun.
And having a guy with all the pads on and people bearing down on him and just like them making a breakout pass or turning it over. And you think it just, you know, who was it that went flying over Hasek? That wasn't in the trapezoid, but like goalies out of the net is a thrill.
It is.
And it's just really, that doesn't happen anymore. So I don't know.
Bring it back.
Get rid of
the
trapezoid.
Campaign. I like it.
I'd be remiss if we did not mention last night in Columbus.
Oh man.
What I thought was an incredible tribute to Johnny Gaudreau and the Gaudreau family by playing 13 seconds without the left winger. Mm-hmm. We were watching at home, just finished dinner, and like my wife watches, but she doesn't really watch. Yeah. She was in tears.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, Columbus hit the right note.
Yeah.
That was absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Hard game to play, I imagine, for those players.
Hard game to play in, and they gave it their all. And, you know, watching this game, and Columbus scored a late goal to come within one. And there was a big part of me that said,
this is going to happen.
Columbus is going to tie this game with 13 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
I never wanted a team to score with 13 seconds on the clock more than Columbus last night. It didn't happen, but man, like.
Yeah, Monahan pointing up after his goal. Monahan scoring was
so tastefully done last night, and something that, you know, this was really hard to, I'm sure, go through
Sickening. I don't know how his wife and his kids and his parents.
Yeah, it's just
even.
It's unimaginable.
That
picture, the picture, I don't know who took it, but that'll be like one of the better hockey photos you'll ever see.
Which one?
With Monahan, with all the guys surrounding him, with the 13 patch on his jersey and him like pointing up. It's just like, that's, you know, it's hard to imagine what everyone's going through there, but I thought they did a wonderful job last night.
Yeah.
Really, really glad you brought that up, Kippy.
Yeah, well said.
Outside of that, little channel surfing last night. I know you were in studio, but I also caught enough of the Tampa Bay Vancouver game to suggest that the demise of the Tampa Bay Lightning has been maybe a little premature.
First off, great hockey game. That was just a really, really great pace, the whole thing, but Tampa is looking good.
The goalie looked pretty good too.
Vasilevsky was unbelievable. Vancouver must have had 20 chances.
They couldn't get a sniff close to the scoreboard because of him.
Kucherov point Gensel is a ridiculous hockey line. Like, maybe league-wide the best.
That's just going to work out for them. Right?
Hagel, Cirelli, Paul.
No, just the move of them to, you know, the Stamkos thing is one that I've been, you know.
Listen, it's a gutsy call by the organization.
But they're one of those organizations that makes, you know, it's like a almost patriot-like, where they make these cutthroat decisions, and they don't let emotions get in the way. They don't
fans trust that, hey, this hurts, but we trust you know what you're doing here.
And Gensel's really good.
Yeah.
Really good hockey player. And you know what he's really good too? Is the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that he's just going to fit right in there, playoff performer. They're a problem.
Yeah.
They need help on defense, but, you know, they can get it at the trade deadline. They can fill in.
McDonough back there, it's like Back to the Future a little bit.
McDonough, Chernak. Chernak's really good. Obviously, Hedman's a guy. And that
He gets hurt a lot too, though.
He does.
He's beat up. There's some mileage on that guy.
Yeah. J.J. Moser, though, they got him in the Sergachev deal. I think he's pretty good D. They're pretty good.
Got another quiz for you. I know you love these. Capitals, Ovechkin,
yep.
60th player to 700 assists.
Yep.
There are 6 players in the history of the NHL with 700 goals and 700 assists. Can you name them?
I mean, how many players have over 700 goals?
So Phil Esposito.
Yep.
Gretzky.
Yep.
Gordie Howe.
Yep.
Mario.
Nope.
Nope. No Mario.
Nope.
No Brett Hall.
Nope. You're just missing one because you guys got
Messier.
No, you don't. You're missing two. So you have
Messier. Yager.
You said Gretzky.
700.
Yeah, Yager.
Mike Gardner.
Nope. So you guys got Gretzky, Gordie Howe, Yager, and Esposito. There's one more you're missing.
Current player or no?
No, think purple jerseys.
Oh, Marcel.
Yeah, Marcel Dion. There you go.
I'm surprised, Marcel Dion.
Do you think
700 goals?
I think the Ovi thing is under talked about.
The goal chase?
Yeah. You know, like I feel like this is it's quieter than you think, like, you know.
Well, I think once he gets a couple, it'll be like, yeah.
You can't underestimate, too, like the political aspect of it, too, that, you know.
Does the league want to sell? Well,
it's sensitive. That's all. It's just sensitive.
Yeah. I do think that it hurts that he's not just a Russian player. He is such a staunch advocate. He's a pro-Putin guy with Putin in his Instagram picture. Yeah. He's not, you know, like, is it Panarin and Zadorov who are not on that side of things?
And yeah, maybe. And to your point, like, it's hard to separate the two because on the surface, the greatest goal scorer, natural goal scorer, in my opinion, in the history of the game. And like Gretzky was not a natural goal scorer. I think he'd be the first one to admit that.
Yeah.
But
by pretty much any metric per game, like Ovi's.
Ovi's, like, it's incredible.
Like, if this was, for example, I don't know, Sidney Crosby or an American hockey player even, we'd be talking about this every single day.
Yeah.
Every goal.
He's still 40 away.
Yeah, which he could literally score this season.
Yeah.
No problem.
Has he got one yet? No, he hasn't got one yet.
No.
Last night I found it interesting that besides the flip, I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, under 18 or 17 minutes last night. So, like, this is a guy that has probably been used to 20 for sure. But he's turning, is he 39?
Getting up there.
He is got to be the thickest man this way. Like, not this way, but like belly to spine.
He's just a big person.
Large tree trunk of a human. And my point with that is that as you get older and slow down a little, harder to play 21 minutes ripping around.
Oh, no, for sure. They're really sensitive on how many minutes that they can give him. Mm-hmm. And last night, I think he was out there sniffing on an empty netter.
Of course. He'll be out there.
A few empty nets I think he's missed in his career.
50 in his career or something?
He's got a lot.
Oh, yeah, he's got a lot.
Allmark could be ready to start on Thursday.
Who are they playing?
The Devils.
Oh, I don't think he's ready.
I'll bet right now
that he's not ready for Thursday, but he's ready for who they got Saturday.
I don't know. But I just have the Devils in front of me here.
We need Valley.
they got Tampa Saturday. Oh, he may have to wait till Tuesday.
Oh, he's really tight.
They got a tough schedule, boy.
What is it?
They got New Jersey, Tampa Bay, Utah, the Golden Knights, Colorado.
Holy.
Yeah.
And tough Colorado, start to the year.
We'll see if they lock it up or not. But
yep.
All right. Four games on tap tonight. You mentioned you're taking Buffalo tonight over Pittsburgh.
I am. Sabre's going to get one on the board tonight.
Boston and Colorado?
Don't know.
I think Colorado still struggles.
They got to figure one out. Underlying numbers so far, I actually kind of like Colorado. Check out my article in sportsnet.ca.
What do you got going?
I talked about the teams who haven't won yet and if they're actually good or bad teams. The answer to that is mostly good, but Nashville stinks.
I'm starting to write again.
Oh, how's that feel?
Really?
Yeah, like I forgot how to ride a bike.
Yeah, it's not like biking.
No, it's not.
What'd you write about?
Amulets?
You had to get one more in.
Well, it's Toronto Star, so I went why Mitch Marner shouldn't sign.
Oh, my God. And, hey, since we're doing shameless promotion, watch Leafs Talk after every game. Leafs Talk with me and J.D. Bunkus tonight after the Leafs game.
You can't do that on Glorious the National
Glorious Amulet.
Hour.
I just did it. Glorious Amulet.
Luckily, I wear this magical amulet.
Our thanks to Luke Robitaille and Ray Ferraro. What are their combined points in the National Hockey League?
A lot.
A ton. Enjoy four games on tap, and we're back right here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. Tell Sammy to stop with his Leaf love on the National Hour. Send us that rating and review. Have a great night, everybody.